it's not your child's job to make everybody around them feel comfortable. It's our job as parents, caregivers, family members, friends, neurotypical people around this neurodivergent person, it's our job to accommodate and let them know that they're loved and welcomed no matter what.
Welcome to the SensoryWise Solutions podcast for parents, where parents can get real, actionable strategies to support kids with sensory processing disorder. I'm Laura, OT and mom to Liliana, a sensory sensitive kid who inherited my anxiety and my love for all things Disney. Consider me your new OT mom bestie. I know my stuff, but I also know what it's really like in the trenches of parenting a child with sensory processing disorder.
Okay, mom, enough about me. Let's start the podcast.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. Welcome back. Welcome for the first time if you're listening for the first time. Today, we are going to talk about the words and the language that you can use to advocate for not only your child, but for yourself, especially when you're in these social environments, particularly family gatherings or barbecues, birthday parties, all of those things where you have a lot of eyes and judgment on your child's behaviors and possibly how you parent them. So I know this is a very heated topic and it's something I get asked a lot about. So I decided I would make a podcast episode. So let's say you have that family party or barbecue to go to and you are already anticipating and dreading the stares, the looks, the unsolicited advice when they see your child not eating anything at the party, or when they have that meltdown about too many sounds, or when those people tell you that you're spoiling your kid by letting them, quote, do whatever they want. I hope you can hear my eye roll through the microphone right now because that's how I want to respond. And people ask me, what can you say and how can you say it so that these friends and family can better understand your child's behaviors and how your child learns and communicates and all of that? Before I dive into that, here's one reminder for you, something for you to think about. Not all family members or close friends are ready to hear the details and the intricacies of how your child's brain works. Some of them aren't just emotionally ready for it, especially grandparents and close relatives. Maybe they're in denial or disbelief that there's anything, quote, wrong with your child, because they might not even realize that being neurodivergent means different, not less than or not wrong. But so maybe they're not ready to hear that or accept it. Some other people may just honestly not care to learn or even understand a different perspective of parenting. And they just think that the way they do it is the one and only way. But it's just the fact that some family members and friends might have some sort of mental block there. So really consider that and think about that. Luckily, I personally have never had to have these conversations with my family or friends only because they follow me on Instagram. So a lot of my family and friends are now honorary OTs and sensory processing gurus because they see my content. Both Liliana's grandmas follow me on Instagram. My cousins, who I'm Filipino American, so we have really big family parties. So they all know about her meltdown, so I don't really have to prep them or explain anything to them. So I'm grateful for that. But for those of you out there who don't have a public platform where you educate about this, this is what I coach my clients through on this exact scenario. And I help them prep scripts for talking to family about their child's neurodiversity, particularly their sensory or emotional regulation challenges. So I'm going to share some of that with you today. So my very first tip is the method of how you talk to this person. And I personally prefer to go through written words, so either an email or a text. And this should happen before the event or the party or the vacation or whatever it is. You could certainly do this in person if you see them before, or on a phone call or a Zoom. But if you're anything like me, then just having things written out is where I feel most confident in these kinds of conversations. I wouldn't consider them confrontational, but it's definitely like a harder conversation to have, and you have to really think about your words and think about the other person that you're giving this information to and that what you're requesting of them. So I prefer to have it sort of like written out and sent in an email or a text. So again, you do this before the event, the party, whatever. And here's kind of my formula, and I'm going to give you an example at the end. So I would just start out by acknowledging that person's own feelings about your child's outbursts, meltdowns, or challenges. I know this part is hard because you're like, well, it's not about them, it's about my child. But again, you have to take into consideration that different people have different mindsets going into this, maybe have different pasts or history with parenting or whatever it is. Everybody needs to feel heard and connected first. So I would start out by acknowledging their feelings about your child's outbursts, meltdowns, picky eating, any of it. Then I would mention the fact that you are working on this maybe at home or with an OT or with the school to support your child through that particular behavior or challenge. Then you're going to give them a very clear example of how they can help you and your child when they notice, see, or witness one of these quote episodes. When I say episode, I mean like a meltdown or like refusing to eat or whatever the thing is that might come out at a birthday party. And then end it with an acknowledgement again of your appreciation for their care of your child, and also offer them a separate opportunity to discuss more if they want to learn more about it. So this initial conversation is not to be like, hey, this is what SPD is. This is how his brain works. This initial text email is like opening up the conversation and getting your needs clear to them, right? Assuming in the past they have like judged you or they made it harder, there's all this pressure. So you are kind of telling them, hey, this is what I need from you. And that's what it is. That's what you're going to ask of them. So I'm going to give you an example. So feel free, take notes, pause this, go grab a notebook, take notes, or you can just click the link in the show notes below this episode to go to the blog post for this episode where I will have the transcripts and notes. And so you can kind of copy and paste that directly into your email if you want, and then just change some of the language so it sounds like you and suits your child's particular needs. So here's the example I'm going to go with. Let's say you have a child who is a picky eater, and every time you go to a family party, your siblings and your mom keep poking at you and making comments to your child about how he never tries any of the food and how you always bring him food from home for him. I was a picky eater as a kid. I would say not needing feeding therapy, but I was a picky eater. My mom always brought like McDonald's for me to family parties, and I loved that she did that. But also I don't remember feeling embarrassed by it. I don't think any of my family really shamed me or called it out to me. I don't know if they ever said anything to my mom, but I always felt accepted and welcomed at all my family parties, even if I brought my own food there. But I just wanted to include that piece there. Okay, so here's how an email or text might sound, including all of the intro and stuff. So it's not just like, bam, this is what I need from you. So here's an example. Hey mom, I'm getting so excited for your party this weekend. I wanted to send you a quick note about Ethan. I know it's really hard for you and everyone to see him struggle with food. I know how important sharing your recipes with him is, and you just want him to taste it and love it like we all do. As you know, Ethan goes to OT every week, and we're working on him adding new foods at home. It's a slow and steady process, but he's doing so well. And then here's the part where you're going to give them examples of how they can help you. So then you would say, I'm writing you because I wanted to let you know how you can help me help Ethan feel comfortable at the party. To make sure that Ethan is regulated and able to make it the duration of the party without having a meltdown, I need to make sure he's full and has his safe foods. So I will be bringing his favorite meals there. It would be most helpful to both of us if no extra attention or comments are made to him or about him regarding his food when he's eating his meal. Instead, you could ask him about his favorite show, Daniel Tiger, or you could ask him about school. I want him to feel comfortable eating at the table with the rest of the family rather than hiding in the room to eat his meal. So I'm giving a very clear example there of how maybe in the past you have had to like either eat at home and then he goes there and doesn't eat at all, or you have to like hide in a separate room at the party or else people are going to ask like why he's not eating the food. So this is bringing like a very specific example of what has happened in the past. And then here's where you ended on a positive. I know Ethan loves spending so much time with you at your house, and thank you for always wanting the best for him. If you're ever interested in learning more about how his brain works, let me know. I'm always up for a chat. And that's it. Obviously, that it might sound different depending on how you talk to that person in your own dynamic and relationship, but that's the formula. I start it with validating. I end it with thanking them, like, you know, assuming that they just want the best for your child. And then in between all of that, you give them very clear examples. So hopefully then that the response you get from them is more supportive rather than any pushback or being critical. But again, obviously put in the own details of your scenario, but just be clear exactly what it is that you need from them to support your child. And also my biggest tip is to be explicit about what you need and try to offer them something to do rather than just saying, don't do this, don't do that. That's the same tips that we do for our kids, right? Instead of saying, don't run, we say walking feet, or don't yell. Can you use an inside voice? We always give them more of like something to do. So if you noticed in there, I did have to say specifically, like, don't make comments about his food, but then I replaced it and said, if you want to talk to him or include him in the conversation, you can ask him about Daniel Tiger or school. So giving them an alternative to whatever it is that they're already doing and not just being like, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. Because that will help them feel less like paralyzed or not know what to do. So if this is more about maybe your child has a lot of meltdowns, I would say something to this person about giving you space or just simply letting you, the parent, take the lead versus just saying like, don't look at us, don't talk to us, don't ask to help, don't get involved. I would say like, it would help me and Ethan best if you gave us space when you see him having big emotions. I'll try to keep him in a private corner for him to have his feelings, but it would be best if you let me just take the lead. So that's some language you can use. Now, moving on to the next part. Let's say they take you up on that offer and want to learn more about your child's sensory needs and how their brain works. Great. That is amazing. That's awesome. So here are some tips for talking to family members and friends about SPD specifically. So one very quick tip that I find is easy to explain sensory processing challenges is using the sensory cup analogy. So again, this is specific to sensory. If your child is neurodivergent, they have other needs, then this might not work for you, but this is obviously what I focus on. So if you want a nice visual of this, then you can go to my Instagram, then go to the Reels tab and search and look, scroll down, and you'll see the video of like clear cups with orange juice. And that's the one where I'm explaining sensory cups. I'll also put the link in the show notes. But basically, if you have a child who is sensory sensitive, then they have a very small sensory cup. And it gets overflowed very easily when a lot of input or a certain input keeps happening over and over. And when this cup overflows, this is indicative of a sensory meltdown or dysregulation, however you want to explain it. But I would tell your family very specific behaviors that they might see or have witnessed your child doing in the past. So it might sound something like this. So when you see Ethan's body flop on the ground and see him having a meltdown, kicking and screaming and crying, he might even hit me, it's usually because his sensory cup is just too full from the excitement of the party, the sounds, the sights, the foods. This isn't about him being bad. It's the way that his brain and nervous system express being stressed. Okay, so for a sensory seeker, maybe you have a kid who moves and bounces around a lot and is super active and maybe even dangerous sometimes. You would talk about them having a really large sensory cup with holes in it. So it's really hard for their cup to be full. And just like a small sensory cup gets dysregulated when it's overflowed, a large sensory cup is dysregulated when it's empty. So when there is an empty cup, they can be dysregulated in the sense of being overactive and wiggly and impulsive. So again, I would talk about it in behavioral terms that that person you're talking to would recognize from the past. So for example, when you see Ethan moving really fast, bumping into people, stomping around the house instead of walking, it's not because he's being bad. It's because he has a huge sensory cup and doesn't notice how hard he's stomping, and he needs more movement and feedback from the environment to feel good in his body. And when I say feel good, that just means regulated, in case you don't want to use the word regulated if that family member doesn't understand that term. So you could also then include other details, like talking about how their body looks when they're dysregulated, and talk about how certain movements or actions or sounds or fidgets make their body feel calm. So you're already talking to them about their sensory strategies. So you could say, I know you don't like it when he's sitting in the other room reading a book, but his brain and body needs quiet and less movement around him in order for his body to feel calm. So this is the best way for him to feel comfortable at the party. So explain it like that. So I would just really stress to them two important things. One, being neurodivergent doesn't mean bad or wrong or deficient in any way. It just means different. Literally the word divergent is like it's part of being different. The second thing to stress is that your child is not bad. They process the world and learn and communicate differently, and it's not your child's job to make everybody around them feel comfortable. It's our job as parents, caregivers, family members, friends, neurotypical people around this neurodivergent person, it's our job to accommodate and let them know that they're loved and welcomed no matter what. And I'm going to leave you here with a quick definition of how I talk about neurodivergent, because I understand if you want to limit the amount of like scientific jargon or like big vocabulary words to a family member who's like learning this for the first time. You don't want to overwhelm them. But if there's one term that they walk away with, I would focus on elaborating on what neurodivergent means so that they can have a more inclusive view, a more affirming view of your child. So here's my spiel on that. I say, humans as a species are considered neurodiverse. Neuro means neurons, which are the wires in our brains, and diverse means different. So we all have differently wired brains, and we all process the world, learn, behave, and communicate a little differently and in our own ways. However, within the human species, there is a more common, typical pattern of brain wiring that follows a certain sequence and predictable pattern in development. And we consider this pattern of brain wiring to be called neurotypical. So this is like the majority of people. But there are other people who have brain patterns that diverge even more than the regular variety of brain wiring. And they may communicate even more different. They may behave or learn more different, and they are called neurodivergent. Neurodivergent brains can include people with sensory processing disorder, anxiety, OCD, autism, ADHD, and so many other cognitive and developmental diagnoses. So again, as a human, we are all neurodiverse. We celebrate the fact that everyone has a different brain, and we celebrate neurodiversity. I am neurotypical and my daughter is neurodivergent. Okay, I hope that was enough information for you. I hope you all feel empowered and ready to advocate for you and your child as best as you can. If you want to learn more ways about different behaviors and how they can be linked to different sensory triggers, even subtle sensory triggers, then check out my new mini course for parents. Head to theotbutterfly.com/behavior to learn more, or the link will be in the show notes. All right, I'll see you next week. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider rating it and leaving a review, which helps other parents find me as well. Want to learn more from me? I share tons more over on Instagram @TheOTButterfly. See you next time.